This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
All right, my Let's Keep It Real people. You know I love all my guests, but I'm sorry if I maybe bombarded you a little bit this week because I'm so pumped to talk to Jeff. And yes, you know, I deal with this every day. And so it has a soft spot in my heart, this subject matter. But before I bring in Jeff, let me tell you a little bit about him. Jeff is the CEO and the founder of Potentia Workforce, a neurodiversity consulting firm. Yes! Prior to starting Potentia, Jeff ran a global staffing company based in Houston, Texas, where his pipes busted today because not used to 18-degree weather. He is passionate about helping businesses to run better by leveraging the entire workforce. Jeff, I'm so pumped you're here. Thank you for being here, and I'm glad that you showered and you figured it out.
I'm pumped to be here. And yeah, we had a little minor plumbing malfunction this morning in the Miller house, but we're here and we're ready to go.
Good. All right, then let's get to it. What's your word for the month? You get to pick one word that best describes your past 30 days, good, bad, or ugly, and then tell us why you picked that word.
Oh, grateful. Grateful. And that's something I need to work on, and I've been trying to work on, because I'm a doer. I'm making task lists. I've got things to do. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I've got a business I'm running. But boy, when I'm at my best and I slow down for a minute and take a beat and think about how grateful I am to get to do what I do. It's really profound for me. I found this sort of, left turn or right turn in my career, well into my career, but I'm just so grateful that I found it. The people that I get to work with, the types of conversations we get to have with customers, that are real and raw, and it's just a privilege to get to do what I do.
So I want you to back up a little bit for those who may not know. I just want to clarify when you say, because you say neurodistinct and they hear neurodiverse.
Yes.
What does that mean? Is it the same thing? Because I got a lot of questions. I want to be saying the right thing. Are there things and ways we should address? Like, is it mean they think differently? Like, how do I refer to somebody?
Yeah. So neurodiversity refers to the fact that really about 25% of the population is walking around with a different brain type. And it could be ADHD or dyslexia or autism, which is the, one that you and I know, very closely. And yeah, it's part of our families, OCD, PTSD. So people with different brains, who are going to maybe show up a little bit differently at work or in an interview, may process information differently, may relate to each other a little bit differently. And the fact that those are, that including the challenges that may be presented, because of some of those things, and because they work in a world that wasn't designed for them, mm-hmm. that they may encounter some challenges, but they tend to have some strengths and some areas where they'll outperform other individuals. And if you can unlock that and support a little bit of different thinking, businesses get tremendous benefit from harnessing that potential of people who think differently. So that's neurodiversity.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say that an individual is neurodiverse, because we're all, it's like saying a person is diverse. We're all diverse, right? But neurodiversity is all of us. But people who are neurodistinct are individuals who have a different brain type than the other 75% of the population that is often referred to as neurotypical.
Gotcha.
So when you're talking about an individual, they would be neurodistinct or neurotypical.
I like it. All right. So We need to know about you and your journey and what got you into this, which I know a little, but I think it's really important that they understand what was pulling at your heartstrings to develop this company.
You bet. Yeah, it really all goes back to my son, Charlie. So Charlie's autistic. He was diagnosed pretty early on, I think 5 or 6.
Oh, okay.
You know, so kindergarten, first grade, we're starting to see that you know, Charlie thinks differently, processes information differently. For Charlie, it was one of his challenges is auditory processing. So he hears you fine, but if you give him a set of instructions, it's hard for him to process those. And so you give him the first one and he might lock in on that. And then you say, and then next we're going to do this. And now he's starting to get a little bit anxious because he knows that this is an area where he struggles a little bit. And then they give the third one. And now he's thinking about the second one. And so, you know, for him, like taking those instructions and converting them in a classroom setting when you get 25 other students and a lot of distractions going on was really tough for him. He's a really smart kid, really capable kid. But that was the area that we started to see that, you know, and like happens in a lot of cases, people are like, well, is, you know, does he not want to follow the directions? No, it wasn't any of that. It was just the way that his brain works.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was an education for me, like all of us parents who've been introduced to this and hear this for the first time. And we're thinking, you know, what does that mean? You've got well-meaning educators who said things to me like, you know, there are services out there that can teach Charlie how to fold laundry and how to, and I'm thinking, I've got a smart kid here. What do you mean folding laundry? But they're forecasting the future and presenting this really bleak picture that a lot of parents have encountered. And sometimes it's, you know, the never conversation. He's not going to do this. He's not going to be able to do that. And I truly believe they're well-meaning, but it kind of sets people up because they have these low expectations that don't necessarily fit what their capabilities are. But, you know, so a lot of us have gone through that as parents. We navigated that and we pretty quickly found teachers that were about Charlie's strengths or about what he could do. And what were maybe some of the accommodations that we could make so that he could learn and progress and do better. And so we figured that out. And I don't say, you know, we certainly didn't get it perfect, but over years and trial and, you know, and a lot of hard work from Charlie, you know, he was progressing at school and doing really well. But I always remember those conversations that we'd had back in first grade about he's not going to be able to do this, he's not going to be able to do that. None of which, by the way, came true.
Right, right.
So it was that, and then as Charlie became a teenager, and in my career, my background's in staffing. I started as an IT recruiter in Boston for a great staffing company up there. I progressed and, you know, moved into management and then regional management. And, you know, by the time Charlie became a teenager, I was running a global staffing company here in Houston and, you know, running it day to day, reporting to the board, traveling around the world, having a great time. But on the home front, I was looking at Charlie and his successes and how well he was doing. And I realized that I didn't have a great picture of what adult autism was going to look like for him and how his mother and I could help support him to be his best self, whatever that was going to be. And so, you know, what was 26 or 36 going to look like? I didn't really have a good idea. And that bothered me. That concerned me as a dad, just to say, I got to do some more homework here. I feel like we're on a good trajectory, but I don't really know, you know, when he gets into the world of work and you know, what's all that going to look like? So I started doing a research project just as a dad, just to try and figure out, okay, what is this going to, I need to do more homework here. And I started learning more about, I was very focused on autism because that's, you know, that's Charlie's brain type. But I started hearing more about neurodiversity more broadly and ADHD and dyslexia and all these things that fit in. I didn't realize that it was 25% of the population. That really kind of blew me away. The second stat that really got my attention was 40% unemployment for individuals who are neurodistinct. So, and that doesn't include the numbers that are underemployed, by the way. But it does include people, many of whom have college degrees, have done very well academically, not all, but a lot of them have done very well academically, can handle the workload, but, you know, 40% unemployment. I mean, and you just think about what that feels like, what 40% unemployment persistently feels like for people who are really bright and really capable and just want a fair shot and yet are not getting it. Yeah. In Charlie's case, for individuals with autism, it's closer to 80% unemployment, which is just unbelievable. So I'm hearing these things, and I'm hopefully I can say this on your podcast. I was pissed. I was getting really
much angry. Worse. I've said much worse.
I was getting it was really bothering me as a father and somebody with a background in employment. And we're at 3.5-4% unemployment at the time. We're very close to full employment. And yet these individuals, and I know businesses that are clamoring to try and find talent. They tell me about it all the time. I run a global staffing company. And yet we've got this population that, if you do the math, it's what, 80 plus million people in the United States. And a lot of them are hiding in plain sight. They're there, and they just want a fair shot. They want to be able to work in areas and do things, areas of interest, you know, where they can want to do what everyone wants to do. They want to be useful and fulfilled and grow in their careers. The thing that kind of and so I'm doing my dad research project, and I'm angry.
Yeah.
But the thing that kind of pivoted for me and made me start to think that maybe there's a business here is I got put in touch with some people that were running neurodiversity hiring programs.
Oh.
And they were intentionally going out and recruiting neurodistinct talent. And a lot of them had personal family connections like I did, as I came later to know. And the people who run these programs have become friends and mentors of mine over time. And, you know, we talk regularly, and they've been just huge for us. But they were talking about, you know, what they were finding from a business case, from a ROI standpoint, and they were finding 96% retention on average, right? Because neurodistinct candidates tend to be change averse. They're not necessarily going to go across the street for another $5,000 if you're treating them well, right? They tend to pick up new skills faster than their peers with similar experience. We think that's because of hyperfocus, because a lot of people who are neurodistinct have interests and abilities that may be a little more narrow than the neurotypicals, right? So they may not be doing a lot of dabbling in other things. They've got three or four things that they really are interested in, but if you focus on those things, they outperform their peers. They're better than you or I in those areas, if you just let them work in those areas, right? And they tend to be more productive. So I'm hearing these things, and I'm thinking, well, this sounds like an ideal employee in a lot of cases, right? I mean, you know, that population that you build, right? And in recruiting, there's talent that you buy, right? Where you bring someone in who's got 10 or 15 years of experience, kind of like a free agent, right? You bring them in maybe at a VP level, right? But there's also talent that you build. You bring people in, you do university recruiting, right? And you grow that talent. So these are individuals that tend to fit into that second category really well, right? Because with those unemployment rates, they don't necessarily have the job experience. They may not have that latest software package that you want, but they're incredibly hardworking. They'll pick up those skills really quickly. And your investment in bringing them on and developing them tends to have a great return, because they're not likely to leave once they've been trained up and go someplace else, right? We were working with a company. It's got about 500 employees, really great culture. They tend to build talent. And the CEO was telling me, we get people coached up, we get them up to speed, and then the big guys come and they throw a crazy offer in front of them, and they scoop them up, and we have to do it all over again, right? Yeah. And for our candidates, not to say that they wouldn't necessarily take that call, but they're a lot less likely to jump.
Absolutely.
Right. And so from a business standpoint, I mean, the business owners I talk to, their number one cost is people, and their number two cost is turnover of people, right? So if you can affect that turnover number, you've really got something. And so I start thinking about this, and I'm thinking, wow, there's a really strong business case here. And so I asked them, I said, how many other companies are doing this? And they kind of chuckled because they all knew each other. It's a very sort of insular community. And they said, well, we think you're talking to all of us, Jeff. There's only four or five companies that are doing this right now that have public programs that you can point to and see what they're doing. But I could see with a business case that strong and something that I believed in that personally, I felt compelled. It was something that, like I said, came to me later in my career, just based on what I was learning and what Charlie was teaching me every day. And I thought, I've got to do this. So I put on my sales hat. I went and talked to my wife and told her why I should leave the corner office and do this startup. But fortunately, she saw how passionate I was about it. And it just made sense, right? I mean, businesses run better when they tap into this talent. And so, you know, let's spread that message to other companies beyond. And we've got five really great case studies. We've got Microsoft, SAP, Ernst & Young, JP Morgan Chase, right? We've got companies that are doing this stuff that are great case studies. Let's take that and spread that message to others.
And what year was that?
That was 2019. It was 5 years ago.
Right before COVID, you started this.
Right before COVID. That's right.
You were traveling a lot. Oh my God.
Yes. In fact, we had a pilot with one of our customers, and we had we have a couple of programs. One of them is called STARS, and it involves recruiting new talent for these companies. And we trained them up. We'd recruited some talent. And we got people started, and then that was 2 weeks before the work from home order came, right? And so we had to shift up everything. The good news is our guys handled it phenomenally well. All those candidates are still working with that company.
Wow.
A couple of them have been promoted. So you know the in some ways the work from home piece was really. Really helpful for a lot of folks in our community.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because what we find with neurodiversity is the number one issue is communication, right? And sort of unscripted social situations. Think about a holiday cocktail party or an interview, right? The rules of engagement there are murky at best, right? Yeah. So, you know, I'm interviewing with you and you say, well, geez, Jeff, tell me about yourself. And what do I give you this much, or do I give you a big answer or a little answer, or how much should I share? Right. The rules are very murky in that scenario. Right. And, you know, holiday parties, same way. Right.
For everyone.
And so those social situations, unscripted, not social, but unscripted social is really, really can be really challenging for folks. But the second one is sensory issues. So, you know, if fluorescent lighting is can be tricky for some folks, or, you know, you're in a cubicle by the kitchen and you can hear, you know, there's smells coming from there, and or the printer sound, or people coming by and, you know, knocking on your cubicle. We have plenty of people that work really well in office environments, but the opening things up to that work from home was really helpful, because our guys, the other thing about our guys is they're rule followers. They want to know what the rules are and they want to follow them. And for a lot of them, they just want clear instruction that makes sense to them. And then they just want to work. They just want to tear it up. So, you know, for a lot of them, you know, that today are working in remote or hybrid work, they've thrived. They've done really, really well because they've got managers who are supportive, but you know, they can create their own work environment to a certain extent with it and address those sensory issues, so they can just focus on doing a good job.
I'm laughing because I don't know if most people don't know, but my son, Cole, is on the autism spectrum, but we didn't find out till he was a sophomore in high school. Like, yep. It wasn't picked up. But so many things that I've discovered, and I'm listening to you to say, is that when COVID hit, my husband and my son were very worried about me because I'm an extreme extrovert. I need humans. And my son came to me, he goes, Mom, I've trained for this my whole life. I'm in good shape, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I'm worried about you, but also the same things that you're saying. And it seems like common knowledge of what somebody on the autism spectrum would need. Not everyone knows, because even at the school Cole's at, we had to fight for a certain type of glass he could wear so that he could drown out the fluorescent lighting. And we're thinking, this should be a no-brainer.
Right, right.
But he had to get approval for a specific glass because it helps with the fluorescent lighting. And today, I took him back to school. Guess what I forgot? The glasses.
The glasses.
I said, here, take mom's sunglasses.
Right?
But that's
tricky. So the spectrum is huge, right? We're talking about, again, 82
huge.
Million people in the U.S. It's huge. So you have people who are profoundly affected, need lots of supports, maybe nonverbal or maybe, you know, very profoundly affected. And you see that person and you know that they're not neurotypical, right? It's evident in their behavior, right? So, you know, they can get the supports that they need, but they may have profound issues that they're dealing with. You know, some people have an intellectual deficiency or disability or something like that. That's the vast majority do not, but there's a group that do, right? In some ways, that's a clearer path to be able to support them.
It's tricky because you think just suck it up. You wouldn't know.
Well, that's it, right? For the individual who can mask and can pass as neurotypical, that can be a very tempting thing to try to do. What we know is that that does long-term damage to the individual. A lot of people develop PTSD or more profound issues because it's like they're carrying around these two big boulders all day, right? And people, well-meaning educators or bosses or, you know, who don't know that this individual's brain works differently, may say just what you said. They may just say, well, just suck it up. Right.
Yes.
You just need to work harder. You just need to. Right.
And
so for that individual
that.
who can mask, who can pass for neurotypical, in some ways, I won't say it's harder, but it's definitely a different set of challenges because the world just wants them to, well, just suck it up. Right. Yeah. That's not a good long term strategy.
Yeah. Jeff and I were talking right before we went on, and Cole started back his first day at Tyler after being off for 5 weeks. So normally kids are nervous about going back, right? And he's a freshman. And his biggest challenge is, even though they get all the special privileges that Cole has, considerations for being on the autism spectrum, the professors will forget because they don't see it. And he was sitting there because he was worried about how he was going to be perceived and how make sure I send the note and make sure they really understand. And I'm not trying to get away with anything. And he just broke out and he's 20 and cried and goes, mom, can you just stop the pain? And I'm like, oh my God, just get everyone to understand, mom. And I'm like, maybe I should, I'll make it my life's work. I'll do the best, but it's rough, you know?
Yeah. It can be really hard. And we see the same thing in work environments, right? You know, And knowing a diagnosis isn't necessarily the whole answer either, right? Because one individual, we have a saying in the community, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism, right?
I love that. That's so true.
Right? But for people who need relatively few supports, they still really need them.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact that they can, that they are capable of masking,
I gotcha.
Doesn't mean that that's what they should be doing all day. They need to be able to, you know, be themselves and know that that's okay.
Yeah.
And again, you know, well-meaning educators and bosses.
Well,
a lot of times say, look, you know, I know you can do this, and they think it's a work ethic issue or a commitment issue, or it's not.
Yeah.
The brains are literally wired differently, and so you've got to be able to. What we talk about with businesses is, you know, it's not about treating everybody the same. It's about treating everybody fairly, right? And that accrues benefit managing anybody, right? The 75% of neurotypicals. There's lots of diversity within that group, right?
Yeah.
Lots of personal struggle, lots of issues people are dealing with. People are motivated by different things, right? So we found that in the business world, neurodiversity is really a way to start talking about creating psychological safety, you know, just creating an environment where it's safe for people to raise their hand or say, could you repeat that? Or I'm struggling with this, or I disagree. What if we did it this way? Right. And that stuff is encouraged, because when you have a bunch of different brains, you want to leverage that. You want to harness that. Right. We get huge benefit as a company by the fact that we're majority neurodistinct organization. So I know for me, one of the things that I've learned over time, when I first got into management, I was 24, and I thought I was supposed to have all the answers, and I thought I was supposed to, tell everybody exactly how things needed to be done, because I had had success on a sales desk or whatever, right? But the reality is that I find that there's a big difference between what, why, and how. And what we teach managers is, you know, spend a lot of time on what you want to accomplish and why you want it accomplished, but where possible, leave room on the how. Because if you've got people, if you've done a good job hiring and you've got diverse brains in your organization, then you don't want the solution to be limited to the one you'd think up, right? Because other people will come up with something, and this happens to me all the time, and say, wow, I never would have thought of that. But that's where innovation happens, right? When you allow people room on the how, right? How to get something done, then and if they're clear on the what and the why, then and there are times, of course, when you know you're doing something that's customer facing, maybe the how has to be done a certain way. Got it, right? That's going to happen sometimes, but more often than not, managers have room in terms of how something is going to get done, as long as it gets done. And this gets done well, right? Then that's a great way to tap into the innovation that you can uncover, from individuals who think differently.
You know, when I was reading over all your different tips, I was thinking to myself, this is how we should be anyhow. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Like, and I was very fortunate running health clubs with so many people, and people, I didn't know it just came innately to me, Jeff, but we had very, very little turnover for the health club industry. I mean, people just stick with it,
which I think is pretty unusual, right?
Yeah, it's very unusual, but it's because we listen to them. We let them try new things. We let them fail. We hired varieties of human beings.
Yeah.
And the one thing that, thank God, I proved to my partner Saul too, it was profitable. And so that's what you and I were talking about.
Yeah.
You're not just saying to people, do this because you're kind souls. It's going to make you money, dude.
It's going to make you money, dude.
Yeah.
That's right.
The big thing. I remember you drilling the first time I spoke, like, yeah, it's great, but I'm not asking you to do this because you're kind. Like, you have all the other ways you can do a business. You need to make money.
That's right.
And this, so I had a bunch of questions about this from my sales peeps. They want to know, when you go in and present this to a company, how much pushback do you get? Like, how many companies do you have to pitch before you land a deal?
We get very little pushback. We get some people that just aren't aware. They don't realize that 25% of the world is neurodiverse. I didn't know that, and I'm a parent, right? We live it every day. Or they think that it's going to be harder than it's going to be. I mean, the things that we do to help businesses be more neuro-inclusive is a nice 10-cent word that we use a little bit, but help them be more inclusive of different ways of thinking. These are tweaks. You know, you don't need to turn your business on its head to do this. It's mainly, minor tweaks that you can make that then allow you to access new pools of talent that you might have been missing. And this is interesting to support the neurodistinct workers that you already have. So that's the thing that people don't always realize. Increasingly, they're starting to, right? You know, when we started, it was okay, neuro what, you know, and you know, now people are getting more educated about it, and they're starting to ask questions like, we had one big employer of ours said, "Gee, Steph, we'd love to do a STARS program. That's our recruiting program.
Yeah.
But we think we do a pretty lousy job of supporting our current employees, especially our current neurodistinct employees, and we didn't even know how many we have. So can you help us with that?"
Ooh.
And so we've got this second offering in addition to STARS, which is called Empower. And it came up very organically because we started getting those questions. But the other thing that started happening is every time we did a STARS program, and every program's a little different because every company's a little different. But every time we did a STARS program, we would get individuals who would come to us and disclose for the first time publicly that they are neurodistinct themselves. And it could be, it could be the executive sponsor of the program. It could be somebody on the team. It could be a manager. It could be, right? Could be anybody. But, and they would say to us, you know, "I've been here for 10 years. I've just masked heavily the whole time. I knew I could kind of get by, but I'm exhausted getting by. I'm not as happy and as productive as I could otherwise be. And I see that my company is taking tangible steps now to actually go out and recruit people like me. Now I feel more comfortable coming forward and sharing, and not just sharing who I am, but volunteering to mentor the new hires that we're bringing in." Right? Because they didn't have that necessarily. They might have had mentoring, but maybe not someone who understood their brain tech quite so well. And they're saying, "I want to mention these new hires that Potentia is bringing in because I believe in this so much." So you take somebody who was kind of closeted, you know, didn't feel comfortable sharing. And for our people, you know, 90%+ of the people we talk to don't consider being neurodistinct a disability. It's part of their identity, right? It's like being left-handed. They'll say it's just part of who I am. Right.
Yeah,
so they weren't able to share that part of who they were. And now they're saying, "Hey, not only do I want to share that, but I see that my my perspective is valued and I want to be a mentor." And you see them kind of puff out their chest a little bit. And it's that shift is really profound. And so we said, "But boy, there's got to be a way to do. Let's do more of that. Right. Let's do more of helping to create that environment." And the thing I say to employers is, it isn't necessarily that you're doing something wrong, right? It could be that that individual has worked in three jobs prior to you, and maybe they disclosed, or maybe it was clear to them that it was not going to work out well. And so they're bringing that sort of past bad experiences to your place. And now they're saying, "Look, I tried that, or, you know, I saw somebody else try it or whatever. I'm not doing that," right? So it isn't necessarily that the employer today is doing anything wrong, but you got to recognize the lives people have been living. And again, they've been living that 40% unemployment rate, right? So, and what that feels like. And that just doesn't mean you can't get a job. That means if you get one, you're not likely to keep it, right? And so it was really powerful when we started to see that shift for people. And so that's where Empower really kind of gets at that idea of, let's unlock the full potential of the people that you've got working for you now. And if they're neurodistinct, 70% of them do not disclose to their employer that they are neurodistinct, 7 out of 10. So it can be challenging for the employer because they're saying, "Hey, I want to help, but I don't know how to help, and people aren't raising their hand and asking for help." And so that's a kind of a tricky one to unlock. But when you do, the benefits can be really profound for the individual and the company.
Yeah. Yeah. So what city? I know you're all over and you're international, but are there any cities or states that really took to it that you're kicking off?
Well, I mean, Houston, where we are, has been great. So, you know, big and small companies, you know, Houston's a big energy hub. So, you know, we've had good luck there. We've had good luck in technology and financial services. But pretty quickly, and I didn't know how this was going to go when I started. You know, we started in Houston, and I was kind of following that staffing model and thinking, you know, we'll put branches in other cities and other countries, and you know, things that I've done, you know, the way that it's worked in the past. But really, you know, it's taken off. Within a year, we were doing national programs for companies, and in the last 18 months or so, we started doing international. And that really just came about. Again, it wasn't something we set out to do, but we had U.S. companies that had a global presence that were saying to us, look, we're doing a lot of hiring in Manila. Can you help us there? And fortunately, you know, with my background in global recruiting, I thought we could. We hadn't recruited neurodistinct talent before globally, and so that we needed to prove that out, but it's been proven. And kind of the good and bad yeah. news of this is that it isn't tough for us to recruit this talent anywhere in the world. Now, part of that is our reputation and how we work and what we've been able to do. But every yeah. city, every major city in the world has this underserved population that just wants a fair shot, right? And that's true if yes. we're in Manila or we're in Manhattan. There's really not a major difference there. You know, there may be some cultural differences that we will address when we're recruiting. There may be some employment issues and employment law may be a little different. So we talk about that in terms of hard and soft factors. So we'll evaluate, okay, what are the hard factors? What's employment law like? Are there any things we need to be aware of if we're recruiting in this other country? And then what are the cultural issues? How do they talk about this stuff? So I'll stay in the Philippines for a minute. So neurodiversity isn't a term that's talked about a whole lot in the Philippines. The demographics are the same, right? They have the same population, yeah. but they talk yeah, about yeah. it more in terms yeah. of people with disabilities, right? It's still using that PWD terminology, yeah. right? So for us, yeah. we just need to know the right language to use to be able to go and access that population. But once we do, they're there and they're hungry for yeah. opportunities. So you know, we're putting people to work and helping people to get into careers in Manila and Buenos Aires and in Australia and you know, really all over the world. Like I said, because it's the good and the bad news of this that you know, the opportunities yeah. are there, the population is there, and it continues to be underserved. So we're doing our best to try to bend that curve.
Yeah. So I better get a couple of these questions in that are going to kick my butt. A bunch of people wanted to know, is it important that the kids have a college degree? So the people that you recruit, do they all have a college degree?
No. For a number of our jobs, they do. And that's a bit of a moving target. So we increasingly are helping these companies to think about, you know, let's keep the main thing here. Right. So
I love that you said that. I was reading that. I'm like, I want to put it up. Tell them that. Like, you have all these brilliant one-liners. I'm like, oh crap, I never thought of it that way.
Keep the main thing the main thing.
I love it.
That just means that when you're talking to a hiring manager, we wanna sort of deconstruct like what is essential? What do you really have to get this job done and done well? Right. Because a lot of times
logic. You're talking logic.
I know. But a lot of these job descriptions have been written, you know, years ago, and they just kind of collect new requirements. Right. And then it becomes this, you know, book report of a job description. Say you must have this, you must have that, you must have the other. So, you know, keep the main thing. The main thing just means let's boil this down. So what do you really need to get this job done well? And in some cases, we've always said you need a college degree to do this. But what if the person has job experience in lieu of that and they're the best candidate for the job? Would you relax that? Right. So we're constantly working. It's a moving target. And for some customers, you know, they really do want the degree and that's fine. But increasingly, yeah. That's less critical, and it's certainly not essential for all the jobs that we work on.
Okay, I just have to know. Just a side note: Are these all your one-liners? Are these other people's too? Because they're ingenious. It makes me remember it.
Well, keep the main thing. The main thing is not mine.
You do know you have all these one-liners.
Yeah. Learn the lesson, lose the label is definitely mine. Because what we found was we'd get these managers in a room and they were really excited and passionate about this. And it's like a kid with a new toy, right? And they start thinking, oh, okay, now I understand autism, right? And so if I have someone on my team who's autistic, I need to approach it this way. And it's like, well, hold up, right? What we're giving is we have that, if you met one person with autism, you have one person with autism idea, right? So, and that's not mine either, but that's a big one in the community. And so learning these things and learning about neurotypes and how that might affect an individual, gives you hopefully some empathy and some understanding. And so you're not going to necessarily jump to the conclusion and say, okay, well, he's presenting this way. That must mean he's not interested in the job, or he doesn't like me, or he's not committed, or he's not, whatever you want to fill in for your explanation isn't necessarily the case, right? So we want to kind of unpack that with people a little bit and try and, pull away those assumptions. When you learn about these different neurotypes, it's really just an invitation to get to know the individuals on your team better. And they're tools that you can use to provide some potential insights, but it doesn't mean that, the woman that I've got on my team who's ADHD, I need a manager this way, and she's going to respond to this with this, right? That's not always the case, right? It's, again, just in the U.S., we say it's 82 million people. You can't broad brush that, right? But it does give people an understanding. And so one of the things that we started very early on was any training that we do is led by someone who is neurodistinct. So they can share their personal experiences. And we have people who will say, listen, I understand you've had that job description for 20 years. I'm just telling you that I would not apply to that job as it's written because it scares the hell out of me. Right. And once you start to unpack that for somebody.
Okay.
They start to get it. They start to understand.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that everybody who works for you is going to respond exactly the way Dave would, one of our guys, right? Because Dave happens to be ADHD and you have someone who's ADHD, right? It's not that, but what it does is it gets managers out of their own headspace, out of their own, well, this is how I would do it. Well, okay, that's fine, but that doesn't mean you're everybody, right? And so then you start to uncover, how individuals are going to work. We've got a tool that we use that's worked really well. It's called a personal instruction manual. And we used to call it the How to Work With Me document, but it's basically the same idea, right? And it's three pages of questions on, this is how I work best. This is what motivates me. This is how I deal with stress and struggle and right. And if you need to give me constructive feedback, I welcome it, but I normally receive it best in this way, right? And these types of things. And it intentionally doesn't say anything about a diagnosis. And it's not something that it's something that if we implement it, we implement it across the entire team, right? It's a bad practice to say we're just going to use this tool for our neurodistinct people, right? You wouldn't want to do that. You want to make a tool available to everybody. But some of these tools are really popular with the neurotypicals on the team because they're like, I've been looking for a way to articulate how I work best, right? And now I have it. And now you probably got a manager who's a little more open to that
because of
this neurodiversity program, right? So we have this personal instruction manual that we work on together, and then individuals will share with their team. Here's an area where I struggle. And one of the really aha moments for us was we have the managers do it first. And our only instruction to the manager is be authentic and be vulnerable. That's it.
Okay.
Right. So as a manager, I need to say to my team, this is something I'm not good at. Now, fortunately, we've got Janie, and she's amazing, and she handles that for me because I'm terrible at that. So just know if you bring something to me like this, that's not a strength of mine. Or, you know, when I get stressed, it shows up like this, right? And they start to share a little bit. And don't be like 24-year-old Jeff Miller was as a manager who thinks you have to have all the answers because you don't, right? The power is in the vulnerability. The power is in modeling that and saying it's okay to, you know, to admit areas where you struggle. And that opens up the whole world for the people who work for you, including the neurodistinct people, to then talk about their stuff. But it isn't about the label, right? It's about just how they show up in the world and what works for them and what doesn't. And they then have that. And so when they go to a new company or they go to a new division, you know, they're able to bring that to the new manager, and they can share that they're autistic or not if they choose to. That's up to them. They own disclosure, right? The individual always owns disclosure, but they can share how they work best and say, hey, this is something we did in our team, and I just wanted to share it with you. I'd love to get your feedback on it. And I don't know if you have something like this, but I'd love to know how I can support you better. If you are open, you know, we have you fill it out too, right? And that becomes, it's one of the ways that we support the neurodistinct population, but it's also one of the ways that it's a real culture changer for a lot of these companies.
Everyone. Oh my goodness. All right. So my brain is just spinning out of control of where you need to put this. You need to do that in schools. Can you imagine what I was thinking about, like my son, blah, 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 if they did that in a classroom setting?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a really good point.
I need to do that.
Yeah.
Serious, like, because I already go into high schools and colleges and it feels like it's so disconnected. Well, what if they had something like that for the kids?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like common sense, but I know there isn't anything.
Yeah, and it's simple. It's a 3-page form that somebody can fill out, and they share what they want to share. You don't need to share anything you're not comfortable sharing, right? But anything about how you work best and, you know, those types of things, most people, especially if the manager does a good job modeling it, right? And you know, don't just talk about where you're great, right? Talk about where you suck. Right. And you're going to create that environment with your teams now. And like I said, these have been implemented now, across companies that just implement them across their whole workforce because they're seeing how this can unlock the potential, create better, you know, bonds between managers and subordinates. And
oh my God, you just saved them so much time.
Just get to work them better.
Yeah. You just saved everybody so much time, so much time. It's so simple. It's ingenious. You know, you start off like that, and now there's no guesswork. Okay, calm down.
But what we found was that, you know, like I said, when we would train people on these different neurotypes, they wanted to jump to the end of the thing. Yeah. We said, well, no, this just gives you an opportunity to learn more about your people, but it doesn't tell you how they're going to respond. You still need to meet them as individuals and figure that out. And.
Yeah. So, yes, we are human. Yes.
Yeah, we're right. And we're more alike than we are different. So consistently the things that we do to you know, to help the neurodistinct among us help everybody.
Yeah, hands down. All right, we're running out of time, Jeff. I could talk to you for hours. This is near and dear to me. You know that. But you mentioned a little bit that you went into all size companies, and I did get a lot of questions on how many weeks are you there? How long does it take to train? Does it depend on their budget? Does it depend on the size of the company? Do you adapt it to what the needs are and financial needs?
So an Empower program, I'll start there. That's very bespoke, right? That depends on, we have different components of what we do to help companies that are either looking to support their current employees better, or they just want to take neurodiversity and roll it out across the enterprise, right? And to do that at an enterprise level, you want to look at how you recruit, how you onboard, how you communicate, what the employee experience is like. So we've got these different modules that we can work with companies on, and we can work with them on one module or multiple. So it's very bespoke. There's a good bit of training that's involved there, and there's a decent amount of consulting as well. So we'll take a look at your recruiting process or your onboarding process, and we'll make recommendations to you and say, look, you don't need to scrap this thing, but if you make a tweak here and a tweak there, it'll open up a whole new population to you that you might be missing, those types of things, right? So that's Empower. In terms of a STARS program, it typically lasts about 6 months. And so the first 13 weeks of that is scoping a pilot. So a typical pilot for us, let's say we're working with the CFO, and he's our exec sponsor or she's our exec sponsor, and she says, yep, I'm on board with this, and we can pilot it in my organization. I'm on board, right? And then we've got HR and the other folks who are involved as well. But we'll work with them to figure out, because a company that's doing this for the first time, we want to learn with them, because everybody does it a little bit differently, and that's fine, right? We use an example of two of our sort of mentoring companies, SAP and Microsoft, two big global staffing companies, very similar in a lot of ways. Both of them had neurodiversity hiring programs for years. And the programs are similar, but they're not identical, right? Because they're different companies and they have different strengths and different cultures and whatnot. So we've got to learn that. And so we try to learn that in a pilot format, right? So let's say that CFO says, I'm on board. And she allocates, three of her hiring managers to go through this pilot with us. And they're going to hire five people across those three managers. Well, we'll scope out the pilot. We'll understand roles that they need to fill anyway, right? They're going to fill these roles anyway. We'll train them on what is neurodiversity, what are the business benefits of it. We'll meet with those managers over a course of, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. Then we're recruiting in the background. We're shortlisting candidates. We're helping them on their recruiting process. Because a big part of this is you want to have a recruiting process that's inclusive, that allows for people who show up differently to be evaluated fairly, but it's still going to be predictive. They're still going to be able to do the job, right? So we coach them on that. We counsel them on that. They select who they want to hire, right? That's the first sort of 13 weeks. The second 13 weeks is just support. So what we find is that our candidates do need a little bit of extra TLC, but not for very long, right? When they first start out and they're still trying to learn the cultural, all the unwritten rules of how any organization works, right? They're not written anywhere, but organizations, and neurotypicals tend to sort of figure that stuff out by watching other people. And we know that the neurodistinct tend to struggle with that a little bit. If you don't lay it out for me, I won't necessarily pick up what you're saying about how a meeting is supposed to be run or how I'm supposed to address the boss or whatever it might be, right? So, lay that stuff out for them. And we're there to help support for about 13 weeks, again, to give them that. Let's see how things go when they get their first assignment or their second assignment. Are there any things that we need to troubleshoot? Right? Because we already trained them, but now we're live, right? And so we want to be there. We want to work with them through the process. And we do about 13 weeks of that. So generally, they get a first assignment. They get a second assignment. If they need an accommodation, we address that. We make sure that they've got a mentor and a manager and some peers that are aligned and helping to support them along the way. And then after 13 weeks, we step back, right? No, we're still available on call anytime you need us. But most of the time, our folks are at least as autonomous as anybody else with similar experience after that 13 weeks. So with the STARS program, what you want to get out of STARS or any good neurodiversity hiring program, whether it's with us or anybody else, you want to get new hires that you likely would not have gotten before, right? You want to be recruiting from new pools that you probably didn't recruit from before. You want those people on board and doing well. But then you want to have a playbook for how did we do it, right? How do we do it in your environment? Well, you guys onboard people this way. We made this one tweak. You guys recruit this way. We made this one tweak over here. And so all of that training that's ND-led, it's also recorded. So it becomes an asset that the company now has. So they've got the new hires, but they've also got the playbook so that they can take that and they can implement it across their organization, right? Because we love the pilots and we love to see them be successful. But the way that we're going to really bend this unemployment curve is that businesses start to see, wow, this worked really well in finance. Why don't we do it in IT? Why do we do it in accounting? Why don't we do it in some of these other areas of the business and get full access to this talent pool there as well? So they've gone through it, they've learned it, and now they can implement it across the rest of the organization.
I can't even imagine how much joy you get every day seeing, unless you're just, you can't even imagine the lives that you're changing. I mean, you're just changing the whole, the landscape of the workforce. And when you started out with some people 40% employed, on to 80%, even when I told my son and a few of his friends that are neurodiverse, I'm going to say neurodistinct. I got to get that. It gave them hope. I mean, they're still not, you know, they're still in college and whatever.
Yeah.
But there was a group of them that I met that, you know, wanted to be a blacksmith, you know, or thinking, you know, that would be best for them. And then but he really wanted to go to college and didn't realize, well, who's going to hire me after that? And I started telling them about you the first time we met. And right away, they're just to see their faces. And I know what you're doing for the company, but it's more exciting to me what you're doing for all these individuals out there, like my son, who knew the stats that it was 80%. He knew way before
And the reason we can do it for those individuals, and I agree with you, the reason we can do it for those individuals is how transformative it is for the company.
Because they're making money with it.
Right.
Yeah.
They're making money. Like, the culture's changing. You have time for a quick story before we wrap?
Yes.
Okay. So I got a call not that long ago from a CIO that we were working with, Fortune 500 company. And he said, Jeff, I just want to thank you. And I said, sure, what'd I do? And he said, well, you know, I knew this program was really going to be impactful. I really like the idea of new pools of talent for us. He said, but I want to tell you, he said, and to put it in context, he said, I've got a well-deserved reputation as a bit of a hard ass. And I said, okay, fair enough. And he said, but I also care about my people. And he said, since we did the program with you, I've had 5 different instances where individuals on my team pulled me aside to thank me for this program and to let me know that they are neurodistinct. And I had no idea.
Oh my God.
And he said, and it gave me, he said, don't get me wrong, I'm still a hard ass, but he said, it gave me an opportunity to show them that I care about them as individuals. That that's the other side of my leadership, right? That I care, I expect a lot and I'm not going to stop expecting a lot, but I care about you as an individual. I want you to be happy and productive and, you know, all these things. And he said, and I just want to thank you because I couldn't have scripted a more organic way for me to show this to my people. And it's been a real culture changer for us. And this was, this was hiring 5 people in one division, but when you have success and then you publicize it, these are the benefits that can accrue because the whole rest of your workforce is watching.
I love that. Oh, I love, you know, when you were telling me about your background, your skills, and then your family, it was just meant to be. I mean, what you're doing, and you're putting everything together every day. All right, so what are you going to be doing for the next year? Like, where you want the company to go, or 5 years? I don't know what's going on.
I want to continue to build out the Empower offering. We got a lot of companies that are really starting to, you know, look at that and think about, okay, recruiting program, great. How do we support current employees? Right. So I think we've got the right offerings there. I want to see those continue to expand. We have an interesting challenge or opportunity that a lot of big companies have been our customers. You know, for a while, our average customer had 50,000 employees. I mean, it's the big guys were really, you know, really active with us. And that's been great. But we know that there's so much job creation that happens in the mid-market, those mid-market companies. And so the company that's got 500 employees or 300 employees or, right, they don't need to be a big guy to do this. They may not think about it in the same terms of, hey, I want to have a big neurodiversity hiring program. They're just thinking about, I got to get better at recruiting and retention, right? And so this is and this is a tool that they can put in their toolbox to help them get there. So I would say, you know, continuing to develop those things and continuing to expand, you know, what a good customer looks like for us. Big guys are great, but the, but that that mid market is has huge potential there too, and we're really starting to make some nice traction there.
Love it. I'm so happy. I'm so happy we connected. And if they want to reach out to you or your company, what would be the best way to do it if they want to use your services?
Well, sure. I mean, they can check out our website. You know, we're active on social and, you know, all the normal platforms, but the website is Potentia Workforce. It's Potentia is like potential without the L. It's actually a Latin word for power. So potentiaworkforce.com, or they can reach out to me directly. That's just jeff.miller@potentiaworkforce.com.
Where would you suggest they reach out if they were interested in using your company services? Which way?
I mean, like I said, they could check out the website if they want to get some more information, okay. but drop me an email is all right, you know, the best way. Yep.
Anything we didn't get in, Jeff, before we go to my Let's Keep It Real people?
No, I thank you for the opportunity. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Obviously, knowing a little bit about your personal situation, you and with your family, you and I are very much aligned in that way. But thank you for giving us the opportunity to share what we're doing. I think it's we more and more people are learning about this, but there's still an awful lot of work to be done. We want to get this message out to as many people as we can, and have them take a look at this, because it can really change your business in some profound and positive ways.
And for me, I see both sides of it. You know, being an entrepreneur my whole life, I just see this. It's just mind blowing to me what you're going to do. But I'm also like, it's just perfect timing. I'm going in to do a mental strength program with high school kids that right now they label it high risk, but many of them are neurodistinct because they already, and I can't wait. You know, to tell them about, like, there's other programs, there's other things out there. So both sides excite me, you know, to be able to tell
them. You hit it on the head. I give a lot of talks, and one of the things I'll talk to people about is I'll pause and I'll just think about what 40 or 80% persistent unemployment feels like. Right. And add on top of that, the fact that you feel like you're speaking a different language than most of the businesses that you want to go to work for. Being able to provide a little bit of hope to folks, who are going through that is absolute privilege for me. And I'm so excited that we get to do that. Right. We're one company. We can have, you know, so much impact in terms of the people that we're getting into careers and the companies that we're helping to transform. But, you know, everybody hopefully can benefit from a hopeful message, because I can just tell you, in the 5 years we've been doing this, we really have seen, people are getting much more excited and educated about this and really see that there's a path forward. It's exciting.
It is. You're just scratching the surface. All right, my Let's Keep It Real people. I know I get excited, but you know you're going to want to share this. So I'm going to put it on all platforms. Check it out. Spotify, if you want to do Spotify, YouTube, LinkedIn, website, and I will share it with Jeff. So he'll put it on all his sites. We'd really appreciate it. And you know what I'm going to say? Until next time. Bye, Jeff, and toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.